Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have a party cast lined up. We've got Andy here. We've got Purnell here. We've got Chris here. And we've got Aki here. How is everybody doing?
Pretty good.
You? Good.
Doing great. Doing okay?
Yeah.
All doing right. Great, dude. Good show.
And if
good
I were you, how are you, bro?
The crickets are doing great.
Same reaction every single time, too. Who talks?
Awesome. Badass crickets.
So let's talk about our weeks. My week was pretty uneventful. Piddles is still in recovery mode. She's doing pretty okay. She had some medicine that knocked her off her ass for a few days, but she's back up to speed today and having a little bit of food. So she's on the mend. Things are seeming good. So
is the prognosis pretty good? Do they think they dealt with everything, or are they not sure yet?
They removed a big chunk, so they got rid of whatever was there and a little extra just to make sure.
Awesome. I mean,
that sounds eventful to me.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't eventful. He just saved my cat's life.
I mean, that was last week.
but old news.
Was it? I thought that was last weekend.
This is new news. This is the new week. Now it's all about recovery. And recovery's going well. So I guess no news is good news when it comes to recovery. Showtime Sperry, how was your week?
Oh, yeah, dude. Got the nickname. It was pretty good, man. I've been playing this game that you gave me, dude. One of many. I'm really... Well, I'll tell you how I feel about it here in a second. And I think I finally got my stream setup all put together. I think I was telling you guys last time I was building a wall in the garage and kind of creating an office down here. So I'll post some pictures and stuff like that, so it makes more sense. But
is Mexico paying for it?
Is that what?
I was like, is Mexico paying for it? And then I said, I kind of had to do it.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's pretty much done. I've been streaming a couple of times since I got everything set up. And I mean, you were in there yesterday, dude.
Watching your Clone Hero streams. Those are pretty fun.
Yeah, dude, that was badass, man. Thanks for jumping in and hanging out, man. That was fun.
Every time I was watching you download things the wrong way, I'm screaming at my monitor. I'm like, there's the arrow right in the corner.
Dude, for some reason, the one the Google Drive download throws me off every time, and some reason everybody wants to send me a Google Drive download, and I'm like, I don't know where it is. So works half the time, and then in a separate browser window, it won't download to my main downloads. It downloads somewhere else. So it was just.
And you still haven't cleared any space on your computer hard drive, which is nice.
No, I did actually clear
hardcore in the red.
I'm in the red, but so I cleared a lot of it, and then I had to fill in for another streamer and play a game for him. And the game they wanted me to play was Crime Boss, which was Rock A City.
I liked that game.
It's good. It's really good. But holy hell, it's an 85 gig download.
Ouch.
And that took up all the space that I cleared on there. So I need to play a little bit more of that and then delete it. So I'm out of the red again. But
how often do you stream, and what is the game you personally are currently streaming?
So I generally stream Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday, but since I've been out of it for the last 2 weeks because of moving and everything else, I've been trying to stream a little bit every day. I started Sekiro on Sunday. Generally, I'll stream either an indie game or a Souls-like or a platformer. I kind of bounce back and forth, so it's not the same thing every time. But right now we're on Sekiro, and then Mondays is kind of my set day for Clone Hero. So we play a lot of songs and stuff like that from like Rock Band and Guitar Hero and stuff.
Okay, and that answers X. I really was like, what is Clone Hero? But I was like, maybe that's some kind of software, like just like some kind of backup software you got, and I'm just not familiar with it. But.
We should explain. Clone Hero is basically a PC version of Rock Band or Guitar Hero that is fan-made, fan-supported. It's not the most legit thing in the world because it's technically music piracy, but, you know, what are you going to do? Harmonix isn't releasing shit, and fans are, so I will go with the fans and download some new music for Clone Hero instead of jumping on Fortnite, honestly.
True, yeah. Everything that the fans have been putting out has been fantastic, and no pun intended there. But also, I've gotten the chance to get songs from people who have like made them themselves, which is really cool.
Yeah, you
know? That does sound awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's really fun.
The thing I missed the most about Rock Band when I was playing it was, Joe already well knows this, is the Rock Band network that they had on the older games where all those like fan charts with the indie songs were popping off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Young with Harmonix was putting out. And I learned about so many out of nowhere bands that way. And then it disappeared. And now it's just like, you know, the usual stuff. So,
It sucks that they couldn't get all the Rock Band Network stuff over to Rock Band 4. I appreciate what they brought over, but there's so much more they could have brought still.
Like, I even think there were actual bands putting their own music on there as a way to get exposure.
There were. The one band that I befriended, Dave Sullivan of the band Hourcast, was the bass player in the band, and he charted all their own songs and put them in Rock Band Network.
That's smart business.
I ended up like chatting with him, talking to him about charting and about Rock Band. We ended up playing a few songs together. So it's neat when you could say you played the song with the artist.
Yeah, I would say
not many people get to say they did that you played with the person who made the song, but that was pretty cool. And they did a show out in Jersey that me and my sister and one of her friends went to, and we hung out on their tour bus and just chatted with them for a while.
How did you learn about this awesome band? Well, there's this video game I like. I mean, that's how I learned about a number of bands myself. Like Jet Set Radio introduced me to so much stuff between Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future. And like, people underestimate the power that video games has for introducing artists. So like, a company will come out with a new game, and people will look through the song list, and they're like, where are all these songs I've heard a million times? They're not on here. It's like, no, I don't look for those. Look for the songs I've never heard of. That's what I want. I want to buy Tony Hawk 99 or whatever the hell they would call a new Tony Hawk game and have a soundtrack composed of artists I've never heard in my life. Like, that's what I want. And then I'll play it, and I'll get to discover music while I discover a new game. And if some of it's good, then guess what? New songs to a great OST.
So. Even without Rock Band Network, I learned of a lot of bands through Rock Band. I'm grateful for that.
Hear to that.
Yeah, it's cool you brought up Tony Hawk, too. That was like a big influence in my life, because it was like all those skate jams like were, I mean, they didn't had like no hold bars on it. You had anything from punk to rock to rap, you know, to hip hop and like stuff in between too, that really like promoted these groups that maybe were well known, but some of them that weren't as well known as they became too. Check it out. Clone Hero also has online co-op too, so that's why it's even better.
And I take it you also just take whatever instruments you've already got, hook up the hub to the USB on your laptop or computer, and just run it that way, right? For the instruments?
Pretty much, yeah. So, I didn't have like a Guitar Hero controller or anything like that. But I actually found a guy that 3D prints guitars. And so I hit him up. He got me a deal on it too. And I've been like promoting his guitars on my stream too. So. I have one. I got one that he did that is the same color as like my main like logo hat color.
That is really awesome, actually.
Yeah, it was rad.
And I like what you're doing with the guitar with like donations and stuff.
Thanks for bringing that up. That's the other thing too, is like anybody who like subs or donates a sub or like donates bits like on on days that we're doing metal, I call it just metal Mondays, you know, or music Mondays. I throw their name on the guitar, and once we like fill it all up, I'm gonna do like a big raffle and send it off to somebody so they can play, hopefully play with me too, or maybe they'll hang it up or smash it or whatever they want to do.
Just got to be careful where you put those names. If you put it where your hand is, it's going to smudge and your hand's going to get all full of marker.
Yeah, I've actually had a couple that I've had to rewrite just because of that reason too.
Nice. Is mine still on there or did you cover it?
No, yours is still on here. Yeah,
I think I blacked that one out.
I crossed it, double crossed it out. No, I think my brother was talking about like some paint pens that I could use that would probably hold up a little bit better than just a Sharpie on plastic. So
yeah,
I think I might try to do that.
Prime time Purnell, how was your week?
Right now the most action things going on is right now, but over the weekend I installed a portable AC unit for my nephew, which I've never done before. It's not a complicated thing, but when you've never done it, it's still free shell because you don't want to screw up the insulation or whatever. But I did that in a 95 degree room. That was brutal. I got back into exercising. I did my first week in ages where I worked out 6 days in the week.
Nice.
I went back to the arcade and did my dance game calorie burn. Burned about 2,500 calories total in one session. And I had a lot of people look like, how in the hell are you doing that? And then people that were younger than me is like, you don't use the bar and you're old. What the hell? It's like, yeah. Hey, don't just because I'm an old man doesn't mean I ain't got it, baby. So it's actually kind of nice that I got that back going. And even though I hadn't been to the place in like damn near like pretty much half a year, where I have half a year, the staff recognized him and they came up to me and was like, you don't belong here. I thought you gave up on us. It's like, no, life was just very, very hectic. And for better or for worse, the hecticness has passed and I'm trying to get my life back to how it was before. So I'm back at it. And they were like, well, they gave me free rein over the department and I took care of business. They turned the music up finally. They got a second machine and I was doing it up. So I had a lot of fun with that. And also, though I'm not sure, I'll find out for sure later if it works or not, but my credit card gives me 5% off at grocery stores this month. So I've been taking that habit of going out and buying Steam gift cards with it. So 5% off of my money, good bet. So I've been doing that. And then lastly, I got another game in the mail that I'll never play because I'm so far behind on the series, the Trails Through Daybreak game. That came in the mail. And I was like, I don't know what it is. I love the series so much that despite the fact that I may never catch up, I'm determined to just keep buying the games. Because the game. And I keep wanting to think maybe I'll have a month off of work and I won't feel guilty about doing nothing in that time but playing through the Trail series. I don't.
That's how I feel with Assassin's Creed. I'm like, this is the year I'm going to complete the story. And then like 50 hours later, I'm still like 20% into the game. And I'm like, I can't do this. Aki, you can attest to that, right?
No, I finished them all but one so far.
I mean the whole being 50 hours in and realizing you're only 20%
through the game. I've put over 400 hours into Valhalla and I'm still not done with that motherfucker.
Yeah.
I think you're like 600 and something hours into it, I think.
You are insane with your completions. Like I've told people about some of your completions and they don't believe me.
Yeah, I'm a little
like what are some of the crazier ones you've had?
I have the entire Master Chief collection and every Halo game, 100%ed both, which is around 1,100 achievements or so, or 11,000 gamer score.
You're talking about the achievements, yeah? Now I get it because they can be any kind of crazy.
I've 100%ed more than 80% of the games I own.
Like shoot a needler into the air and had to hit a bird that flies by once every playthrough or some crap.
Yeah, well, I got all the achievements for the Master Chief's collection, Halo 2, which involved beating it on the hardest difficulty, and I did it in co-op. Sucked.
There are hard achievements in Halo 2. I don't know how you
do
that shit.
That's the worst one because it treats it as though the Iron Skull is on, and if you do it in co-op, it restarts the entire level instead of from the checkpoint like it's supposed to.
Ouch.
So it sucked. That was the single worst one. That was fucking misery inducing. That's one of the worst ones I've done. I've 100%ed every Assassin's Creed game other than Valhalla, and I only have like three or four achievements left in it.
And I'm guessing I just those need games to get have back the to doing collect. That. And I'm guessing those games have the sort of like collect 1,000 MacGuffins throughout the map to get an achievement.
No, only a couple of them had stuff like that. No, this one's like beat this, you know, roguelike part of the game using the shitty armor without healing even once, which is one of the last achievements I have in that game. Yeah, it's gonna suck. I've only managed to beat that mode one time, and it was fucking misery. Now I have to do it two more times with two different other issues, and it's not gonna be fun. But get there. I've 100%ed all the Far Cry games.
Christ.
Some of them twice. Not all of them twice, but some of them twice, yes.
I find every cache in the game.
What else? God, those are some of probably the worst, in my opinion, just because they take so fucking long.
Yeah, you're pretty nuts. But,
yeah.
Basis of Brutality, Chris, how was your week?
Hey.
I couldn't think of a good alliterative nickname, so I went with...
Well, if you... I have one. Actually, Brooke gave it to me about 14 years ago. And it's C-Money.
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 Yeah.
C-Money, how was your week?
running Texas.
Actually, it has been full of brutality on base, funny enough. But, yeah, you know, filled in with a friend's band for a gig, which is really cool. Been learning the Returners material because I will be joining them in California. Next month for a show called Brew Game Plus, huh?
Nice.
I was asking what con were you playing at, or is it a bar or a music?
It's a multi band showcase that I do believe it takes place at a bar. It's called Aztec Brewing. They're kind of close to San Diego, and yeah. Also, this weekend I had the had a lovely opportunity to play a stream in a streamer showcase of retro gamers focused on non-Nintendo games. So it was called Nintendon't. specifically Best of Nintendon't 7. I played Godzilla on the TurboGrafx CD. And
yeah,
it was pretty cool. It was on Twitch front page. So,
wow.
Had a lot of viewers for a minute. How many people did you get watching? It's close to 1,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
TurboGrafx represent.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably, that game is not well represented, especially not the American version, because that one is an exceedingly rare game. And but it was nice to show it off and kind of show like how much attention to the films the video game paid. It was actually quite a good game. That was pretty much it for me. Like I said, just kind of working on all these different things that are cropping up right around the time I'm supposed to move house. So, you know, that's always when it happens, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and this weekend, I'll be playing, with Super High Tops at Classic Game Fest, which is a event in Austin that, goes, all the way back for me when it comes to video game covers. The very first video game cover show that I ever played was at Classic Game Fest 2, which was in 2009, back before there was a Descendants of Erdrick, and it was just me and Amanda and a drummer from her other band. And that's the very first video game cover show I played, was at this event, and it's still going on.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Now you're back.
Yeah, that's rad.
I never left.
Yay.
I've just been quietly sitting in the corner.
All right. And then, Aki, how was your week? Are you sad you didn't get a nickname?
No. God, no. it's been kind of shit, actually.
The detergent denier, Aki, how are you doing?
Yeah. God.
That's just a fact of life. That isn't denier. It's a fact, okay? It's not been a good week, actually. Saturday, I went to my uncle's birthday party. He turned 60. He got shit-faced, and I don't like him when he's shit-faced, so there's that. I was gone from the house for 12 hours, so I didn't get any work on review games done. The following day, I went grocery shopping. When I got home, my TV wouldn't turn on, so I didn't get any work done that day. Monday, I got my replacement TV really late at night, so I didn't get any work really done on Monday. And now there's today, which is where I'm talking about some of the very little amount of work that I've actually managed to get done. So, my week wasn't great so far. But it is picking up. The TV works. I've managed to get some work done in games. I've managed to get some adulting done. I hate adulting. I got some Gunpla coming in tomorrow. So, you know, things are starting to pick up. It's starting not to suck so bad. But yeah, right now, it's not great. Yeah. Later on this week, it'll be better. But the start of this week has... It sucked pretty bad so far.
I guess something good did happen in my week. I got my capture card working.
Yeah.
So now I can stream Xbox stuff on my PC.
But will you?
I already did some power wash.
Did you?
Oh, okay. Nice. Okay, you're getting there.
I'm thinking Friday nights I'm going to try doing like Rift Tracks and What the Dub and Use Your Words, stuff like that, Jackbox. I think Friday nights is like late nights, like after Rampage, because I got wrestling at 10 o'clock on Fridays. After that, like 11 o'clock at night, maybe I would jump on and stream stuff. That's what I'm thinking.
That's good. You just have to make it consistent so people actually start showing the fuck up.
I know.
You can't be like me and you know, like do one stream every like, you know... 15, 16, 28 months, you know, you got to do it a little more often than that.
We're going to start with baby steps and just like inch my way into things and see how it goes.
But, good.
Speaking of games, should we get to games? We got six to talk about tonight.
Sure.
Before that, I want to mention something that I just came across. I think Chris would be interested in possibly. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
I know Chris does RPGs and such. I just saw that they released Root. You've been known to dabble.
Known to dabble, something of an RPGer myself.
I just saw that they released Riviera on Steam.
Riviera, yeah. The Game Boy Advance title, right?
Yeah, and like that's like one of the only releases it got. It got there, and I think at one point it was on PSP, but it might have been only in Japan. And that's it. So the fact that it's on a... modern console or modern Applicum system now, that's a good place for it to be. I never even got to own it.
See, that I do own it on the Game Boy Advance. I played it a little bit, but not very much. Like, I kept meaning to come back to it. but that's exciting for me, because anytime something like that shows up on Steam, I'm like, all right, two more years, it's going to show up on Switch.
That's right.
And it's,
maybe with a physical.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, as a purchasable thing rather than, you know, on the Blockbuster video that is the, you know, NSO, which I love, but that's kind of how I feel about it when I play it. I'm just like, well, someday this is going to be gone, so, you know, don't invest too much into it, but, you know.
I just try to tell myself that the Steam will probably be the last thing to go of any of these sorts of things, so otherwise, ugh.
True.
But I do get what you're saying, because it took till me getting the Steam Deck to even bother buying games on Steam, so...
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I looked at the Steam sale, and I was like, I already got it all on Switch. I thought about buying the Final Fantasy 3 and 4 3D versions, because I hear they're much better on Steam than they were on the DS, but then I was like, you know. I don't know, I had the opposite problem with Steam that I do with Switch. It's that with Switch, I pull the trigger immediately, and then with Steam, I'm just like, I don't know, maybe I'll wait a few years.
And that's the funny part. I'm the opposite. Like, with me, I was buying for Steam, I mean, for Switch originally, because I was like, well, it's a portable system, and I love that, you know? But then I have a gripe when it comes to Nintendo's digital stuff. regarding like how they generally don't move it up with their new hardware. So I was like, yeah, I know once they move on from the Switch, it's all going to be locked in my Switch. So I hope everything's okay. And you know, now I got this. I'm like, well, my games I had on Steam in 2004 are still on here. So confident with that. But I was having a conversation with somebody just the other day where it's like, what's the point of even having consoles anymore? I was like, well, everybody, but like mostly Nintendo, because I feel like the first party lineup is what keeps them rolling. Like, will long term keep them going. Because even if everybody starts moving towards PC, as long as Nintendo's like, Mario's here, Zelda's here, and they keep making good ones, that'll always be at least the second system I own. Always. So that's just how it is with Nintendo stuff. They got the
market. I feel like a bastard. I haven't had a Nintendo since like the Nintendo 64.
They've gotten pretty good. I'd say. Argue that they haven't.
That they haven't gotten better, you mean? Or
that they stopped being good at the Super
Nintendo. I don't know. I think peak Nintendo is Pokemon Snap, personally.
Well, they re-released that on Switch, so there you go.
But I have
to. Make a sequel?
Yes, there is a second Pokemon Snap game, yes.
I said, that would be the real sellers. Like, they remade a sequel. If you like Pokemon Snap, you can play new Pokemon Snap, which is surprisingly the actual name of the game.
Yeah, but Pokemon Snap is already perfect as is.
You can have more of it.
Fair. That is good reasoning, actually.
You can't have too much perfection. I mean, come on.
So Matt TV in chat just came in and said that they saw Thimber mention Disaster Band earlier, and they just picked it up. We're going to be talking about that on the next episode of the show, but Disaster Band is pretty hilarious, too.
Oh, yeah.
Never heard of it.
Well, you'll hear about it next episode. But for this episode, we do have games we got to talk about. Let's dive into these.
Okie dokie.
First game to talk about tonight is Darkest Dungeon 2, developed and published by Red Hook Studios, released July 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $39.99. Darkest Dungeon 2 is a roguelike road trip of the damned. Form a party, equip your stagecoach, set off across the decaying landscape on a last gasp quest to avert the apocalypse. The greatest dangers you face, however, may come from within. Andy, tell us about your time with Darkest Dungeon 2.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a question already.
Go for it.
Who hurt you?
Me?
Yes. Anyone who plays games like this, that is the first thing I have to ask. Who hurt you?
Have you ever played this game before?
I've watched people play the first one, and it hurt my soul to its core.
there's definitely a lot of soul reaving in this one, for sure.
There's a lot of soul hurting.
Very.
Yeah. I titled my, like, because I write everything out too, I titled it like A Hell of a Ride too, which is exactly what it is. But I can tell, I don't know. Let me tell you about it. Darkest Dungeon is all about making the most out of a bad situation. There you go. So, which is stated in its opening foreword. Heroes die. Failure will abound, and the world will seek to smother your flame. It is a hell of a welcome to a hell of an experience. It is literally a hell of a game. It's a game that I felt like was overall like a feast of an experience. Like I would compare this to like a meal, you know. Everything from the art style to the music, the weapons, items, combat systems, the characters, and the enemies. Every piece feels like full with lots of layers of gameplay, mechanics, unlockable traits, everything that makes up this world. Character backstories and the emotional toll this crumbling apocalyptic world has on each of them create a deeply immersive experience. I personally felt full every time I play this. I'm actually playing it right now as we were chatting too. So it is good. And it does feel like every piece of this game is like it like a giant steak, you know. It's kind of a daunting task at first, you know. They throw you in with a lot going on, but I feel like Red Hook Studios did a really superb job of like giving everything one bite at a time. So let me break it down for you a little bit. First of all, if you've ever played the original Darkest Dungeon or seen somebody play it, in your case Aki, you'll recognize some comparative gameplay to this one. And for those who haven't, I'll tell you a little bit about it. Darkest Dungeon is a very challenging gothic roguelike. It presents a turn-based battle system and deals heavily with the psychological stress of adventuring. You build a team of heroes to adventure into the depths, but then you add new elements like stress, disease, personal fears, and flaws, all while battling unimaginable Lovecraftian horrors. When the light from your torch finally goes out and you think all hope is lost, the heroes are the first to see the failure to come. So where Darkest Dungeon was groundbreaking, Darkest Dungeon 2 improves upon every aspect created in the original. With each new run, you'll create an entirely new group of heroes. Starting options include the Highwayman, Plague Doctor, Duelist, Man-at-Arms, and Grave Robber. More are available through special quests and gameplay. Each character has a basic set of skills and attacks, along with elemental resistances, battle stat tokens, and trinkets that apply only to them. New attacks can be attained by completing each character's backstory at Shrines of Reflection, which are found along the route. As you learn more about the characters in the game, you'll also learn which character combinations work better together than others. Abilities and rank placement can drastically change an outcome of a battle. The Altar of Hope, which is your first real true stop in a new run, is considered the main hub after a long journey. And this is where you'll use candles received on previous runs to upgrade or unlock characters, items, and attributes to increase your chances of survival. Unlike previous games in Darkest Dungeon 2, the journey is made toward the mountain by Stagecoach, taking a more, if you've ever played like Monster Train approach from the original. Characters ride on the coach and make choices along the way towards key points on the map with branching optional courses that are set out, ultimately leading to the same endpoint. Each choice presents its challenges and can affect the characters in a negative or positive way. Some set up along the path as battle encounters, also places to heal, buy items, or interact with the starving town people. The Stagecoach has its own set of stats in the form of what is presented as like wheels and shields. Rough terrain will cause the coach to break down. Going over rough terrain will remove one of the wheels. You have two starting out, which can result in a battle while characters make repairs. Also, a lack of defense will lead to a similar outcome and leave the party open to highwayman battles. Full repairs can be made at an inn, which is the safe haven between a full map run. This then brings us to the first of many encounters. Battles are comprised of turn-based rounds. I'm normally not a turn-based game player, but I truly enjoy this style of gameplay. In this game, the top corner will display turn order for each round, allowing planning and strategy going forward. Characters will display health, stress level, and defense, along with any buffs or debuffs applied to them. Also, a glossary is available for quick lookup on stat definitions, since there is a lot to remember. The character's attacks will be displayed also, showing damage, crit chance, any stat conditions or applications, along with what might be one of the most strategic part of the battle, the character position. This determines what attacks are able to land on which monsters based on the character's current position, with some attacks being unavailable unless in an exact position. The same is applied for enemies, and enemy stats are available to look up as well to determine an even more in-depth approach to the game's battle strategy. So you can see where your characters are lined up and what attacks and moves they're going to be able to do on what characters. And then also you can go through and scroll over another character. So if a character is in a certain spot, you can push them or pull them out of their current spot to kind of change their moveset. Characters receive stress based on different monsters, other characters' actions, how well the team is doing in battle, or based on choices made along the journey. Too much stress results in a meltdown, having serious consequences on that particular character and those around them. Negative character traits may be added, health lost, and turns forfeited. While occasionally the character will rise to the occasion and resolve, bringing themselves and those around them up to face the challenge ahead. That hardly ever happens, though, but when it does happen, it's really good. Battles result in loot earned and occasionally skill and mastery points to be used to upgrade an attack during that run. Some battles are huge undertakings full of large boss enemies and multiple rounds, generally resulting in at least one party member being unalived along the way. If that happens, another can take their place once they visited an inn. Inns not only providing a rest from the long journey, but also current expedition stats. Trinkets to be purchased for your character or stagecoach, mastery training to upgrade attacks, and a route in which to continue your journey. I actually my characters just died too. So I died just before I played. Which kind of sucks too. I was just in a battle that was three rounds and I was on the last round and the dude absolutely wiped me out. So sometimes you can take them on, sometimes you absolutely cannot. Even if you feel like you're doing well. Tides turn in battle quickly. A token glossary and an in-depth tutorial guide are also available. So if you ever get lost along the way, you can just look those up. Like I said before, there's a lot to digest in Darkest Dungeon 2. And honestly, and like talking about it, I feel like I've only covered about half of it. It's got like there's so much to this game. There's so much, and I'm so glad they have that little tutorial because it really does kind of like set things off. There's so many symbols and meanings and things they're referencing that I had to look it up like all the time the first couple times I played it. But you get used to it. It's got incredible artwork.
I love soundtrack. The visuals in Darkest Dungeon.
Oh yeah, from the character animations, enemy animations, the art. I mean, the art is so good. I love the art. I absolutely love art in games, and this one. I mean, like the original Darkest Dungeon, I love the art, and I felt like this one they only improved on. And I feel like overall they improved every aspect from the first one into this one. So. I was a big fan of the original, and I feel like honestly the only way to like truly understand what this game is about is to kind of take the journey yourself.
All right. Yeah, well, it clocks in at $40. We need an official verdict on this one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Don't, as Duck says, don't go in without lube too. I mean, there's a lot of gameplay here. I mean, it's a roguelike, so you're going to be going through multiple times, different character combinations, figuring out what each character does. I mean, there were so many other things that I didn't cover in this. There's relationships between characters. There's different battle modes to certain things. There's pets you can get to. I don't know if you can pet the pets. I actually got a pet, and then I went to go do another run, and for some reason my file didn't save correctly.
No.
And it just erased the previous run, and I was like, oh man. So I'm like going back through trying to like upgrade something so that I can get the pet again. But I'd say get it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's on sale right now for $23.99. Yeah, it's on sale for $23.99 on Steam. I'm playing it on console. I mean, I would get it.
Released on Xbox, brand new release. It is still full price there. They also have an Oblivion edition with the Binding Blade DLC for $44.99. So if you're interested in getting a little more content, you could drop an extra $5. Otherwise, the DLC is $10 on its own. But yeah, this is a good one. Yeah,
this is a good one. Yeah, yeah, you can get it. You can get it for full price. You can get it on Steam for a discount right now. I mean, I forgot about the DLC too. The DLC adds some characters. It adds some new enemies to it too. There's so much, man. it's good, man. Like I said before, I'm not a big turn-based combat player. Like I avoid them at mostly all costs. But this one really brings me in.
Very good. All right, well, Andy, that is it for you. Were you going to stick around or were you going to head out?
I got to go hang out with the kiddos.
Ah, sounds fun. What kind of plans do you have?
You know, I think the missus, we just have one of them this week. The other two are at their other dad's house. So, and I think they're upstairs playing some Fortnite Lego right now. So I might join them on that.
Nice.
Yeah, well,
you have yourself a wonderful night. Thank you, as always, for coming on and doing your thing. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Oh, I just want to thank you guys for listening to my incredibly long review about Darkest Dungeon 2. That was, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, you guys, have yourself a good night. One. Yeah, see you guys.
Good night.
Have a good night.
All right. Next up, Magical Delicacy, developed by Scowl, published by Whitethorn Digital, released July 16th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $24.99. Available as a part of Xbox Game Pass, and it's going to be hitting the Switch August 15th. A wholesome pixel art platformer, cook magical delicacies from a vast collection of ingredients in your own shop. Explore an unfamiliar town and deliver tasty treats to the townsfolk. Learn new ways to traverse, discover secrets, and experience a unique witchy world. Aki, tell us about your time with Magical Delicacy.
Okay, in this, you play as a cute girl who is a witch. And that basically just means you cook. Not that you cast super cool magical spells. No, you make sandwiches. Yay, so, you know, sandwiches. There's that. Yeah.
Sandwiches are their own kind of magic,
I guess. You are brand new to this, and you're like, I've heard that this place has a whole bunch of witches. I'm going to go there, and they're going to teach me things, and I'm going to be the best witch ever. You get there, and there ain't a goddamn person there that's a witch. Because fuck your life. So you get conned into...
I like how you take an E-rated game and drop the F-bombs right away.
Yes. It is my life.
Sorry, so Whitethorn.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're immediately conned into basically buying a house. So, you know, this might be reminiscent of some other games. And it is now up to you to work that money off. So you can own this house that you never actually asked for.
Fall into
the
abyss.
And you do that by going around the town and figuring out what people want, making them that, and getting money for it. For this, sometimes they don't tell you specifically what they want to eat. Instead, they say, oh, I want something with a herb in it, but I don't want it to be a soup or a provision.
Well, you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say welcome in to all of the raiders. Dopey, thank you for the raid. Welcome in, everybody. We are the SML Podcast. We are a gaming podcast. And right now, we are talking about the game Magical Delicacy, which just released on Xbox and PC today.
And it's an E-rated game, and I've already dropped the F-bomb, so, yeah. You know.
Yeah, she's good at that.
Yeah.
So, as you were saying, keep going about Magical Delicacy.
So, like, you...
And I keep wanting to call it Magical Delicacy. Like, I don't know why. Magical. Magical Delicacy. I can't... Oh, my God. This title is messing with me.
It's gotten worse.
Oh, all right, Aki, just talk so I shut up.
Yeah, so they might say, I want something that has an herb in it, but I don't want it to be a soup or a provision. So now you have to go through the list of all the different recipes you have and figure out what you can make that satisfies what that person wants. And for some of them, there are a ton of things it could be. You just have to figure out what you actually have the crap to make. And that's basically a good chunk of the game. You do open up more of the city and unlock different abilities and shortcuts and stuff as you play by giving people certain food items. Like, for one individual, pretty early on, you give them food and they give you an elevator pass that allows you to go to another area. One of them gives you a bridge pass, so you can see an entire different area of the map. Things like that. You also unlock abilities like a double jump, which is amazing. And very useful, and one of my favorite abilities. And most of what you're doing in this game is just fulfilling people's orders to get money so you can upgrade your shop. Be it buying new items, because at first... all you have is the ability to cut things and make soup. And that's it. So you can make salads and soup. Have fun. But later on, you can buy things like an oven to make bread items. You can... there's so many different things. I can't even think of them all off the top of my head. Storage units, so you can carry more than 30 items on you. And when I say 30 items, I mean 30 items total. Like, you, if you have a stack of 30 onions, that's your 30 items. Have fun. Yeah, it hurts bad. Even when you buy the storage, they only allow you to carry to put 50 items in them, which means you can have a few of each item if you have all three of the different shelving units.
Jeez,
there are a lot of there's a lot of ingredients in this game, and it hurts. It really hurts when it comes to like actually being able to hold anything in your inventory. I would change that if I were the devs, just because inventory limits kind of suck for a player. It's like that's not fun,
especially something that's kind of selling itself as like a cozy, relaxing game. Like, that's stressful.
Yeah, especially when like people might want like. You might, like right now where I am in the game, I have like 15 different recipes I have to create. Each one of them requires like 3 to 4 different items, and I can carry 30 items on me. That sucks. Because yeah. I'd rather just go out, be like, okay, I need to make all these different things. Let's just grab every item I need for all of this. Go back, finish it real quick, go back out, hand it all out, and be done with it. Instead, I'm like, I can make 2 or 3 of these at a time. And then go back out, come back, make 2 or 3, go back out. It drives me crazy. Because even when you finish making a meal, that is still an item in your inventory. That drives me nuts, too. So you get rid of some items, only to have another item. And I personally have found, I feel like I've kind of locked myself in the game. Because there's a few different types of currency in the game. There's these red coins that you get that pay for most things, like if you need to buy ingredients instead of actually growing the few that you can grow. It costs actual coins. Lots of the upgrades you can buy for your house and stuff all cost the red coins. But then there's also feathers that you can find that people accept, and those get you new recipes. If you don't buy certain ones and instead buy different ones, you can kind of screw yourself, because, like, right now, there's a few people on my list that want sandwiches. Hey, kids. I don't have the ability to buy bread, and I can't make it because I don't have the recipe. It is a recipe I could have bought. I didn't know I need it, so I didn't buy it, and I have no feathers. So it's like, this sucks. So, you know, you have to actually know what you're going to do. So it's kind of like, don't buy anything until you have to buy it, which kind of isn't particularly fun, because like there's a ton of recipes in the game.
Yeah.
You just want to buy whatever you find when you have the feathers. That's just the normal way of playing games like this, is you're like, I have feathers. I can buy these items. I'm going to buy them. And that's all that goes through a gamer's head, because we're dumb.
Even the Steam page is like, use dozens of ingredients. Like, if you don't have the space, what's the point of having so many ingredients?
Yeah, and all the extra different types of coins, I don't see the purpose to. Like, we don't need the feathers. There's also another one, which I haven't even seen who uses them yet, but they're yet another currency. I'm like, just convert all of this into the red coin. Just make it one currency. The rest of this is unnecessary fluff that slows the game down significantly and can softlock you, as has seemingly happened to me, because I can't find any more feathers anywhere, and that's preventing me from fulfilling orders that I have right now, because I have to make sandwiches and I can't make bread yet. So there's some issues. However, the game is beautiful. The traversal is really fun. I like figuring out how to get to different areas. Interacting with people is fun, because they do have a lot of things to say, and some of them are very cute, and some of them are kind of adorable, because, like, not everyone here is even a human. Like, there are frog people here, and they're just the most adorable things ever. I love them. So you have a bunch of different people that you can interact with. The world is huge. It's all just one city, but this city is gigantic, and you slowly get more ways of traversing, which expands it more and more and more. I don't know if I've even found all the different places I can get to right now. I think I have, but I'm not sure, because it's just so big, and it's awesome. Like, some areas, like, pathways open when it's nighttime, because then the moon activates certain stepping stones that you can jump onto that don't exist during the day and stuff. It is so cool. And then it gets just hampered down by inventory space and all of the different types of currencies that aren't necessary. So it's like for every one good thing, there's something that really sucks that just pulls it down. And it makes me sad.
How does it average out when it all comes down to it? It's a $25 game. What are your thoughts on this thing?
I think this is a tentative try it for now. I do really like the game, but because you can soft lock yourself so easily by just buying recipes out of the order in which the game arbitrarily decides you have to buy them without letting you know, it makes it very hard to say this is definitely a buy it game. If that was gotten rid of and everything just cost the red coin so you could get them, period, this would be totally a buy it. But now, because that's not the case, I have to put it to a tentative try it.
So make it more cozy.
Yes, please, please make it more cozy. One currency, infinite inventory space. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Do that, and you've won me over. Hi-ho, Silver, let's play this game.
Stacks count. Like, stacks are one. Like, that's how it should
be. Let me have a stack in 99. It's
how every game is.
Exactly.
Damn. But, well, it's on Game Pass. Try it?
Yeah, definitely try it.
Cool. All right, next game, Fallen Leaf, developed and published by Delta Shore Games, released July 15th on Steam for $16.99. Fallen Leaf is a retro side-scrolling adventure focused on tight, action-packed level design set in a whimsical world where almost anything goes. Purnell, what is Fallen Leaf?
So Fallen Leaf is a game where you play as a character named Leaf, who is a treasure hunter along with his sister Petal. One day while on an excursion, they stumble across a cave. Leaf goes into the cave hoping there's treasure inside, and what he finds is a golden chest that contains an evil warlord who decides they want to conquer the world now that they've been released from their entrapment. And now it is up to you, under the tutelage of the wizard Willow, the original person who trapped the wizard, to seek out our warlord, to seek out a magical orb that can be used to reseal him. And this is done by having to traverse the world, seeking out the golden chest that contains said orb. So the exploration can be described as a combination of Super Mario World mapping with what I genuinely consider to be sort of like Mega Man-esque platforming. So side-scrolling left to right, and you have multiple characters, but you start out with just using Leaf. Leaf has pretty much a bullet that he fires from his gauntlet when you push the attack button. He can jump, he can duck, and he can slide. As you explore the map, shooting down bad guys and hopping and bopping about, though I guess there's no bopping because you don't stomp enemies, but you'll occasionally come across treasure chests. And if you open those treasure chests, you'll get money, which can be used to make purchases at towns you come across in the game. But in addition to that, you might occasionally find gauntlets inside the chest. And when you grab the gauntlet, your weapon will get an upgrade that goes up to two stages of upgrading. And it just makes your shot more powerful. So you'll want those because obvious reasons. If you take damage, though, that will get depleted back down to base level 1. So don't get hit. You also have basically the equivalent of a sub-weapon, though you don't get them from beating bosses like in a Mega Man game. Instead, you come across them sometimes in the golden chest at the end of a level, because at the end of every level, there is a golden chest. And sometimes it might contain one of these sub-weapons. Other places you can get them is by purchasing them from shops, sometimes from like little mini-games you come across in the main world, or a number of other ways, because there are surprisingly a few different ways to come across sub-weapons. And they run off of a special weapon gauge when you use them. It drains slightly, and then eventually you can recover it by killing enemies and getting like potions that can regenerate it. Eventually, you'll come across additional characters in a variety of different ways. Sometimes they're narrative-driven. Other ways they'll just come across by ways that you have to find out on your own. And all the different characters play differently. Sometimes, for the most part, it's like slightly differently, but it's different enough that it matters. Like, there's a character. First character you get is, of course, Petal, Leaf's sister. She is slower than Leaf, and she can't duck or slide. and her gun is weaker, but she has a like a butterfly that can fly around and attack enemies for you. So basically, oh, it can fly cool. up and hit. Yeah, it's pretty. It's surprisingly useful. An enemy that's in a position that's kind of precarious, well, the butterfly, which I think his name is Pollen, will just fly down and start pew-pewing it until it's dead. So, not so bad. Also, Petal's jump is higher than Leaf's, which seems like it's not too much higher until you get to certain platforming sections where you're like, man, I barely have enough time to make it from here to there to there. But then that little bit of oomph that Petal gets is enough to make it so that you can do it. Her downside, in addition to the stuff I named already, is that she doesn't stop on a dime. Like, she has a slight slide. I guess, like, Sonic does that a little bit. She has a bit like that. And then you'll get other characters that play differently, too. You can switch between them anytime you want using the trigger buttons, which is pretty awesome in that regard. Same with the sub-weapons. You can switch anytime using the shoulder buttons. So, it's pretty fun to do that. While you're sporting the levels, there are secrets to be found, but also kind of like how in Mega Man games, the secrets aren't really hard to find, but they're still fun when you find them. Like, oh boy, I shoot this rock and the wall opens up and now I get some money that's hidden behind this wall. I mean, let's be honest, how many times have you played a Mega Man game like, man, that secret was really well hidden? No, it was just fun hidden. And you open it and you get happy with what you get. The game does that too. And at the you can find things like there's like little peapod people you got to collect. There's like one in each level that can be turned to the mother pea stalk. And if you return them all, she gets taller and taller. And eventually you unlock stuff by doing that. There are a ton of levels in this game. They're all fairly short. Like, they're very succinct levels, but they're great levels in their own right. And again, there's a lot of them. Like, World 1 has maybe like 20 levels in it by itself. When you factor
Steam page says over 70 platforming stages. That's insane.
Yes, it is. And that's just it. Like, I might play through a level and go, man, that level ended pretty fast. But then I also go, there's 70 of them at least. So I'm not even complaining about that because that just means there's 70 reasonably spaced levels. Like, you'll beat a level in like 5 minutes if you don't die, basically. Put it that way. A level could take you 5 minutes, but it's a good 5 minutes. Super Mario World had short levels. Nobody goes back and says, man, these levels sucked. No, they just enjoy the levels for what they were. Yeah. And this is a game has it too. Like I said, there's a little occasional mini games you might come across, like little towns that might be on the world map. And when you go to those, you'll talk to NPCs. Sometimes they might request items that you could have found in some of the gold chests. Sometimes they invoke mini games and the like that you could use to unlock stuff. And of course, you can shop. There's a lot going on in this game. And quite frankly, it is a stupid amount of fun. The music is good. I don't know if I'm going to be like, you know, listening to this in my car anytime soon, but it's very retro inspired and it does make you tap your foot when you play. It's got good music. I have this on my wish list and I can definitely say that I am not disappointed in this game. This is a surprise hit of this year for me. And I'd love to find myself still talking about it when all is said and done, because it is a very good game.
Cool. Well, it clocks in at $16.99. Soundtrack's $4.99. What are your thoughts on both of those?
Easily worth the buy. And I feel like the soundtrack is mainly going to be what you think of it once you're playing it yourself. Because, again, it's very retro. And in that regard, you might find yourself going, I like this music, but I'm not going to bop it in my car. You might find yourself going, yeah, this is just what I've been looking for. It just goes about wherever your taste is. And I do like the music. Let's not get it twisted. I just haven't had the super earworm yet that made me say, let me go to the store and buy this soundtrack now. Just more like, this music's doing great for the game while I play it. And I like that.
The game's a worthwhile purchase?
Without a doubt. This game is fantastic.
Cool. All right, next up, Dross, developed by Emerge Worlds, published by Red Deer Games, released July 12th on the Switch for $24.99. It's actually on sale until August 2nd for $9.99. Dross is a dark fantasy adventure where you'll swap between a small gooey creature and her human bounty hunter shell, explore freely through 40 unique diorama-like levels filled with strange characters, intricate puzzles, hidden rooms, and ancient collectibles. Chris, what is going on in Dross?
Okay, yeah, so Dross is a tale as old as time. You take control of a hero character known, well, a bounty hunter, so like anti-hero kind of character, known only as the Captain. You infiltrate a tower in order to meet a character that has a bounty on his head called the Alchemist. It's very, very creative names here. once you get into that tower, you get surrounded and murdered by these slimy creatures called Dross or Droz or whatever. I think they're called Droz. But there's no voice acting. Well, there is voice acting in the game, but it's gibberishy type stuff. So it's not like actually like
can absolutely really be Droz, and I'm just wrong the entire time.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But
tell us about Droz.
Well, only because there's a pun. There's a pun that you come across that requires it to be pronounced Dro to work. So that's the only reason. The only clue I have.
Gotcha.
Anyway. You get murdered by these things and end up in the sewer, missing your arm, on the verge of death, just barely conscious. At the same time, you are a little Droz who blinks into existence elsewhere, or blinks into consciousness, I should say. A lab has exploded, a lab where you were presumably made, and you have to get out of that lab. However, your fellow Droz, who are hiding underneath buckets and like helmets and stuff, warn you, hey, if you're gonna get out of here, you need a shell or you're gonna die. Droz are, you know, they require some kind of protection because their little slimy forms are not, you know, are not meant for the world. By the way, this is like a little, just like a goo kind of snail almost with a single eyeball is what a Droz looks like. So anyway, you so you do a little bit of platforming and learn how to control your Droz, and then the Droz comes across the captain and decides, hey, this dead guy is going to make a real good shell for me. And so, well, she actually just considers him just a shell. Like, she doesn't realize there's even a person there. So she attaches to him, and then he wakes up because he's actually not quite dead yet. And he's like, what the heck? And she's like, oh, hey, this shell talks. So why don't we go fix you up? Like, I can actually fix you, and we can get out of here together. And then he's like, okay, let's go find my arm. It's got a sword attached to it, so that'll be handy. And so the Droz and the captain go, and your first task is to find your arm, which has your sword attached to it. And once you do that, your hero gets put back together because the Droz has magical kind of, if not healing power, then maybe kind of gluey powers. anyways, it's never quite explained. But you find out that there's bits of light called Prima that you can find in a collectathon sort of way. That when you collect them, and basically they can be spent to restore your hero, your captain's life, essentially his life skill. So thus starts the story. So this is a you know, an isometric platforming action puzzle game. Where they cleverly, you know, because you take control of the captain and of the Droz and learn them separately, and then you kind of learn how they work together. So it kind of has a silent tutorial in that sense. And the way that you get through the stages is that you go through the stage with the hero and Droz, like, you know, both working together, you know, with the hero acting as a host, and then it's kind of Zelda style action. You know, you have a sword that you can swipe at things, you can break boxes, you can block enemy fire and projectiles, you can do all kinds of combat-y things. However, the character has heavy armor and a very weak, almost dead body, so he cannot actually jump. He can only move across things. Then what you can do is you can unattach the Droz, and the hero kind of, you know, collapses like zombie style, and he can't do anything to help you. He can only move with the Droz helping him. So the Droz, who I don't know if she ever actually gets a name. The captain eventually starts calling her Slimeball, but you know, maybe that'll change at some point. Anyways, When you're moving as her, you move faster. You can also jump and double jump, and you do that, you know, you use that to platform around the stages in areas that you can't get to with both characters, and you do things like push buttons, move things into place, you know, interact with the stage in some way that makes it passable for both of you. And of course, the drawback to the Drows is that the Drows absolutely cannot fight. If anything attacks the Drows, then she gets sent right back to the hero, and you have to basically start from wherever the captain is. So it's a really clever way of like kind of creating this this dual existence, you know, this symbiosis. The other thing is that there's a little bit of a Lost Vikings style aspect to it. So sometimes when you abandon the hero, maybe you need to have him weighing something down. So, you know, you get him to like a button or something that he needs to like be pushed down. Like, he's actually has utility even when he's just dead weight. Like I said, basically the goal of the game is to get from the entrance to the elevator, because you are in the sewers at the very bottom of this tower. The captain still needs to go attack that alchemist. I guess he can't just leave well enough alone. And Droz also has her own, like, she needs to get out of the tower as well, and, you know, that involves helping the captain, because he is her shell, after all. So, you know, they're kind of working towards a common goal, but as you go through the stages, it's not simply just stages, although it is, like I said, you start off at an elevator and end up at another elevator, Toe Jam and Earl style. But, you know, like I said, along the way, you may, of course, you spend way too much time in the sewers. I can't knock points off for that, because that's every video game for some gosh darn reason, but definitely the case here. Because it's like when you're going up like three floors, like there should eventually not be any sewers anymore. Who's got three stories of sewers? Anyways. And they built a town in one of them, so it's you actually do go into towns and you communicate. You know, you talk to other characters, you meet other characters, you find out that there's actually more to this story than you thought. For instance, the creation of the Drows is kind of a mystery, and there may be some larger, much more dangerous Drows out there that you're going to have to deal with in order to, piece together a MacGuffin that you're going to need in some way or another. You know, the plot thickens and unfolds. It's not simply just running through the dungeon, which is kind of cool. What I really like about this game is that it has a excellent hand-drawn art style to the like portraits of the characters. The thing that I think is really interesting about this is that every character has just this element of butt ugliness to them, and yet they're adorable. Droz herself is a great example. She is just, like I said, kind of a pitch black tar snail with a single eyeball, and yet she is adorable. You know, her dialogue's great too. Actually, I quite like her, but it's weird how like a hunk of slime was made to look so cute. But then again, I am a Dragon Quest fan, so I know how that can be done. You know, the hero looks kind of half dead even when he's like fully alive, so it's kind of, you know, his symbiosis like look is, you know, like I said, ugly, but, you know, it's still like kind of endearing in a way. All the townspeople are just like these, you know, most of them are like these warty or dark or like kind of, you know, run through the ringer type of characters, but they all look like, you know, like I said, really cute. You meet Drows and humans as well throughout the adventure. I really, really like the art style in this game. Soundtrack's not much to write about, but that's okay. It's kind of atmospheric more than anything. There's only one real, like, about the whole thing, and that is, repeat after me, everyone, it has performance issues on the Switch.
I was gonna say camera.
Well, camera issues actually aren't too bad, and actually I have something that you may like, regarding that. But no, it's more that the frame rate suffers. It kind of chunks along. Really, I mean, it's, you know, I am not a person that's like, oh, it has to be 60 frames per second or nothing. No, I'm like, I'm fine if it hits 30. If it hits 30, I'm great. But this doesn't sometimes. So when you're rotating the camera and stuff, you're seeing like, you know, just this kind of jitteriness a little bit. It's fine once you start moving. Your characters are usually fine. It's just because they're moving so many assets at once, it's just, it kind of, it creates this thing that looks great in screenshots, but not so great in action. And honestly, I've, you know, of the 1,400 plus games I have on Switch, at least 200 of them are like this. So again, it's not something I am singling this game out for. I'm just saying, you know, it's unfortunate, and maybe it's just an unavoidable part of indie development on the Switch. I say indie development because Mario Odyssey never had this problem. But but no, I wanted to tell you regarding the camera. Yeah, I mean, the camera just straight up rotates. I don't think it's that much of a problem. But the once you get to the first town, the one that's in the sewers, you get introduced, or your little droves gets a sip of Prima soda, and the soda gives her special vision expanding powers. So she gets enhanced perception to view the world from a higher perspective. Nice. Literally, it just lets you pull the camera back further to like see like the whole level, essentially. But I do love that it's like done through special magical soda, which I think you would appreciate.
That is very cool. So, the game sounds pretty fun overall. The price is the weird thing. It is normally priced at $24.99, but Switch, they usually have their weird pricing things going on. It is on sale until August 2nd. For a whopping 60% off, down to $9.99. What are your thoughts on the game?
Absolutely a buy it at $9.99. At $24.99, I would think maybe it has a physical edition oncoming. But I mean, there's 40 floors in it, so it's like the content is there. I would actually say that this is a game that could, so, you know, I would just say $24.99 is just, you know, that's just a leaf in the wind, because this game is, you know, great enough for it. But again, for the performance issues, I have to say, you know, it makes games feel cheaper than they are.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely, $9.99. That's a great price. I would go ahead and jump on it. Like I said, it might be considered a hidden gem someday. But, you know, $24.99, I'd weigh the pros and cons. You know, some folks don't care that that the game chugs a little. Because, like I said, it doesn't interrupt the gameplay. It's just when you're moving around the camera and you're trying to, like, you know, take in this nicely drawn, like, very pretty-looking world. If it's got a physical version, you know, obviously that explains the price. So, you know, just, you know, go in the direction that you normally go for that. But no, I think this game's pretty special. Like I said, I, you know, honestly may even consider, if it's on a different platform, like PlayStation 5 or something, picking it up there just to see if it's smoother. But no, well, I
so
like this
far
one.
It's only on Switch, but maybe in the future it'll hit more platforms.
Well, and, you know, we've had this happen before with some other games where, you know, like Skellboy, for instance, where, and that Skellboy was a way more intense example of Switch slowdown, or just, you know, not efficient something or other. I'm not a programmer, so I can't tell you, but just they dropped the patch on that one that actually made it way better. So maybe that could happen with this one. But again, I do reiterate, I mean, just watch like some video footage of it or something, because it's not detrimental to the gameplay. The gameplay is fine. It's completely fine. It's just, like I said, the it's just got that jitteriness to the backgrounds moving and stuff like that that make it seem less premium than I think it should be considered.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on. Next game is Aerial Knights We Never Yield, developed by Aerial Knight and Beta Jester, published by Head Up, released July 16th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $14.99. Discover pulse-pounding, stylized parkour action as you run, jump, smash, and slide through an Afro-futurist-inspired kingdom. Enjoy a single-player or two-player local cooperative mode and experience the story of two brothers and their unexpected return to their lost kingdom. Aki, what is going on in Aerial Knights We Never Yield?
Okay, this is going to be a fast one, you guys. It's great. So you play as apparently two brothers. I didn't realize they were actually brothers until now. Thank you for that. And this is one of those, they automatically run, you need the push buttons to get out the fucking way type games. Basically, in this, you play as both of them at the same time, and, you know, they're auto-running for you, and sometimes they have to dodge out of the way of things, either jumping over stuff or ducking and sliding under things. Typically, at least at the beginning of the same time, I assume later on in the game, they start having to do things independent of each other, which is where I'm going to get stuck. But then there's also times where they can break through weak walls or something like that, and other times where they have to grab onto a zip line and fling themselves out to the next section of the level. All of this is controlled with either on the keyboard, which is where I suggest playing it, with the ASDW buttons as well as the arrow buttons, one controlling one character and one set controlling the other character. Have fun. It is so hard to do. It sounds easy. It really isn't. Or if you're playing on the controller, which I don't suggest because it is kind of fucky-wucky as whether it's going to work or not, it's the arrow buttons and the AXBY buttons, or if you're PlayStation, whatever those buttons would be.
No, it's not on PlayStation, though. So.
Well, you can use that controller still on Steam. True. It has some glitches in the game. Namely, almost all of them that I've seen have come to using the zipline, which is an optional thing. When a zipline shows up, you have to use it. If you're on the controller, sometimes the character, you just can't push the buttons. They just don't register. Which ends that play real quick. Sometimes they'll ignore that you push the buttons and will either die or they will continue running right through the level, even though they're not supposed to go any further, which means you have to restart the entire level all over again, which really sucks because sometimes these levels are not exactly the shortest things on the planet. The gameplay is very simple. When the game tells you to jump, you jump. When it tells you to duck, you duck. When there is a wall you can't jump over or duck under, you plow through it. And when there's a zipline, you take the zipline. That's it. There's four buttons times two. That's all you have to do. There are a couple different game modes. There is co-op, which I assume allows you to play as one character and another person to play as the other. There's single player, where you play as both, and then there's chill, which is where you also play as both. I don't know what the difference is between chill and single player. I would have really liked if chill let you choose one of the brothers to play as, so you could get used to the game, and then so you could get like skills with one hand, and then play as the other character and get skills with the other hand, and then go into single player and using both hands, because now you got this stuff on lock. But sadly, it's just the same thing, so I don't know what the difference between them is. In single player, there is multiple difficulties. Go with the easiest one. Make your life better, please. This game is so hard. You would think, with there only being basically four actions for each character, that this would be a super easy game. It is not. Really isn't. Even when they're doing the same things at the same time, it is so easy to screw something up. And that's the great thing about this game, is it is so simple, yet it is hard to do, even though it is so simple. Just controlling the both of them makes the game so hard to do. But actually playing it is very simple. It's four buttons. That's it. And sadly, that also means there's not a lot to talk about with this game, because it's jump, duck, bash through, or zipline. That's it. That's what the game boils down to.
Well, so, I guess the important thing is it fun?
I absolutely love this game. It is great fun when it doesn't glitch. And again, all the glitches basically only happen at ziplines. There is something wrong with the ziplines in this game. But otherwise, no, the game is real fun. I thoroughly enjoy it. I think it, obviously because of the glitches, I think it does require a little more fine-tuning to hopefully fix those issues. But other than that, I've really enjoyed it. It is very fun.
Cool. $15?
I'm totally for it.
Cool. Works for me. One final game to talk about tonight is called They, developed by Sims and Somoga Inc., published by Somoga Inc., released July 7th on Steam for $6.99. The 16-bit cult classic RPG from 94 returns with tons of improvements. When your peaceful kingdom is attacked on your wedding day and your wife-to-be is kidnapped, it falls to you to journey across the world and stop the terrible machines of war that threaten to lay waste to it. Brunel, what is going on in Vey?
So Vey is a game where you play as a prince by the name of Heil. What is it? Let me see. God, I had to write it down. Heibelger. Oh, God, I hate that name. Prince Heibelger on a quest to rescue his kidnapped fiance and also save the world after his kingdom is attacked by the Danic Empire. If you've played one of the many RPGs that existed back in the 90s, you kind of have an idea of what the formula is like in this game, which involves running along a road on a world map that is seemingly linear to get to a town. Usually the town will offer some form of shop where you can purchase upgrades for your characters. And then you'll also likely get a general quest or an indication of where you need to go next, which will then be found by going down the road further to the next location, and which will likely be a dungeon. And you'll explore the dungeon where monsters may exist. You get treasure chests which may have items in them, fight a boss, and progress on the next thing. You might hear me say that and go, wow, that's a way to, like, just that's reductive of this game. And I don't really mean it to be that way. That is how a lot of RPGs in the 90s were.
And that's what and we like, game, damn it.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Because, I mean, the fun fact about it is that I'm right before this game, I learned that this game was even coming out. I was prepared to play an emulated version of the Sega CD version because this was one of the few working designs Ultra Series games I never got a chance to play. And it was one of the things like, I was like, it was on my bucket. It was like, I got to get back to this at some point. And of course, there was a lot of working designs issues that people had with it, such as how they increased the difficulty of the game by reducing the money enemies gave, increasing the enemy encounter rate. I don't know if they made the battles themselves more difficult, but they basically made it so that grinding was far more necessary to progress in that game, thereby inflating the length of the game. And funny enough, that's where one of the improvements in this game comes into play, though I'll go into that in a second, because I should also mention just the generalism of combat. Combat in this game is random encounter focused, so you'll be walking around and then boom, an enemy's going to strike. Everybody gets to choose an action for their turn. You can have up to four people in your party at once. You have physical attack where you can choose a target. You have magic attacks, shield, and running away. And using items, of course. There's also an AI option. I'm not messing with that crap, though, because I don't really have a lot of faith in what it's going to result in. So, not doing it. Not doing it. And as you fight, after you do, everybody takes an action and takes a turn. The enemies will then turn, take their turn. You manage to win the battle. You'll get experience, and you will get gold. Again, pretty typical tropes. However, one thing that's interesting about this game, now I'm going to the one of the improvements, is that they made it so that you could toggle the amount of experience you get and also the amount of gold that you get. Now,
it's I'm already Gil. Prepared to say this.
Was that? I know it's gold. I ain't going to damn Gil is Final Fantasy for me right now. I ain't doing no different. So it's interesting because I'm prepared to say this game is pretty easy, and yet at the same time, I say this knowing that I did turn the gold up to times two because I had a miscalculation on how gold was attributed to you when you won battles. Why is that? Because one of the other things you can toggle in the game is the difficulty, whether you have it on normal mode or hard mode. And originally, I thought that hard mode just increased the encounter rate because, my God, the encounters, when you put it on hard mode, are like, bam, bam, bam. You don't get a chance to hear the dungeon or old bat music because they come so frequently. Jeez. But what I didn't realize is that it also reduces the amount of gold that you get in experience. So I saw the hard mode gold yield and said, this is just brutal. This isn't even fun. So I turned the gold up into times two. Not realizing that, you know, again, that the hard mode was reducing it. So you might be asking yourself, so why put it on hard mode, Pernell? And that's because I thought it was making the battles more difficult. But all I was really doing was making it so it took longer to accomplish literally anything. So once I realized the designs. That's the funny part. Like, this part I don't think is working designs, or at least the original idea came from them. But with this, they decided to go, hey, let's give you some toggling. But I would wager dollars to donuts, the hard mode is what working designs originally did, and you couldn't change it in that game. But thankfully, you can in this, and you don't have to beat yourself over the head. And again, no, it doesn't make the battles more difficult. It just makes it that it takes longer to accomplish literally anything. So when I finally made that distinctive correction and understanding, I set it back to normal mode, left the gold up as times two because I don't need that grind in my life right now, and left the experience exactly where it was at times one or 1.0, and see how I progress. And frankly, I had no problems from that point on. So no complaints there. One gripe I did have about the game, and I'm pretty sure this is par for the course of that era because Lunar had the same problem, but I'm just going to mention it here for anybody that's curious about it. You do have magic in the game. Certain characters get magic spells, and of course, some characters are built to be using magic spells. However, I don't feel like the amount of damage magic spells does justifies using more powerful spells. Like, you might get a spell that costs 20 magic called Hellfire, and that spell, when you cast it, might do, I'm making this number up because it obviously depends on the monster you're fighting, but it'll do like 250 points of damage to every enemy in the fight. Meanwhile, if you use the flame spell that costs 8 magic points, that one does 230 damage to every enemy. So you're spending like 12 more MP to do 20 more damage. Hardly worth doing. So I just have been spamming the one spell the entire game, except for when I just don't care about how much MP I got left, and then I'll just jack it up for the extra 30 damage or whatever. but Lunar had the same problem where I just dumped a bunch of spells on you that were useless and unnecessary. So maybe that was just the way it was for that time. I don't know. But yeah, I wish that spells, you know, higher powered spells actually mattered in this game, but they don't. I do think it's cool that I thought that they retranslated it, and maybe they did, but it still has a lot of jokes in it. So, whereas originally when I was worried, I'm one of the few people that actually liked the working designs dialogue in the NPCs because it made talking to NPCs in towns worth a damn. But I thought that with this not being working designs, that those dialogues would be gone. I'd be stuck with the guy saying, man, this town shop is so expensive. Just pointless dribble. But instead, it is still humorous. I made a note of one specific dialogue I came across where I was in a desert town near a place called Penang, and a character goes, you think in a country like this you could find good General Tso's chicken, but no! And I was like, yeah, this isn't the working designs translation. They still decided to keep some yucks in it, so I'm not complaining.
I think the original was pretty humorous, if I'm remembering correctly.
Like pre working designs?
Yeah, like the Japanese version actually has jokes in it.
Well, that's good to hear then. Yeah, because I always wonder about that. Because again, like working designs went nuts with some of their translations. Like I know Lunar was especially like humor compared to dry. So if that was originally humorous, then I give kudos to it then, because I did smile a few times. Nothing made me burst out in the laughter, but I have had a couple cracked smiles, so that makes talking to NPCs worth it to me. So the music in the game is, I mean, it's decent, but nothing that's going to blow your socks off. It has a battle theme that is repetitive, but it's high energy, which is enough for me. The dungeons pretty much use the same dungeon theme throughout most of the game. Town theme is pretty much the same throughout most of the game, and same for castles. But again, that's just kind of how it was for a lot of RPGs back then. Look at Luffy. I love Luffy. Yeah. Luffy is pretty much that formula. So again, you might think I'm talking about this game in a way to trash it, but no, what I'm telling you is that you are getting a retro 90s RPG
in 2024.
You keep adding that like I'm trashing the game. But you're right. But you are right, though. It is in all its glory.
This is unabashedly 90s, and it's proud of it. And
that is correct.
It's like a new Kemco game that's not made by Kemco.
Where are you playing it too?
I am not. Actually, it's on my wish list. I'm going to drop the $7 for it tonight after hearing your review.
Okay. I probably will too, even though I'm currently in a playthrough on my Genesis.
So yeah, we mentioned the price. It is $6.99. What are your thoughts on it?
I do believe it is worth the cost. Like it's scratching my personal itch that I've had for the game where I've wanted to play through it. And it's holding up, which also I should also mention one last thing I should mention as far as like some of the updates on the menu screen. I want to mention those two. I mentioned hard mode toggling. You can turn battles on and off straight up. So if you like want to just go back to town or whatever, just turn the battles off. Level up healing is default to on, and I had to go online and confirm that the original game healed you on level up too, because if it didn't, I would have turned it off, but it does, so I left it on. I mentioned the gold multiplier and the experience multiplier, and you can also increase the battle speed and the mass speed, so you can make this game as freaking speedy as you want. So nice. No qualms there. It's a good game. It does its job well, and I do believe these updates make all the worth, because as anybody who's been in a lot of RPGs in the 90s can tell you, you spent a lot of time wishing you could speed up the walking on the world map sometimes. So yeah, give you that, and that's worth its weight in gold. I think this game is very much so a buy.
Sounds good. I'm gonna buy it now. So and it's cheap.
All right,
it is so affordable. Like I honestly when we first got this game, I didn't have a price for it, and we didn't have a release date for it. It was only after release that they messaged us, and we're like, hey, the game's out. No embargo. Have fun. And I was like, all right, I'll see how much it costs. And I saw it was $6.99. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was expecting $15-$20 bucks for this.
I mean, it's probably because resellers have, you know, had jacked the price of the actual Sega CD game up so much. It's like $200 now, I think.
Lord.
Seriously?
Ooh. Yeah. It was like 70 when I bought it, but jeez. that felt expensive, but that's because, like, you know, only like really rare stuff was actually over the $100 line.
Yeah. Ultra now 70 series. Bucks is just like a dinner.
Mm-hmm. Now I will be that one guy where, frankly, I'm very much in love with the situation where someone's like, hey, here's this game that's selling for hundreds of dollars in the retro market. You could buy it for 20 or 10. Like,
old.
Thank you. That's all I want. That's all I want. Because the physical wanters who need to have the old cartridge can have it. And then people who don't care about how the specific version of the game can get this, like Chrono Trigger is a big one for that. That game's cart from the Super Nintendo is still expensive.
Yeah,
it's increased quite a lot.
It's going up, Jesus! Like,
yeah, it's around 250 to 300 now.
They've released multiple versions of the game since, with the more definitive ones, legitimately, in my eyes, the better way to even play the game flat out. And yeah. It's like that cart. It's like, okay, well, it's still there for you if you want it. But if I want to play a game and I don't want to go through that hassle, there's more modern versions of it that I can get my hands on for a reasonable price. And I'm still not selling my copy, though.
I literally just bought and am downloading Vi now on the Steam.
Nice.
Yay! So I sold two copies on this review. That's a new record for me, I think.
Well, I'm going to finish my so what I'm playing is, I mentioned it's on my Genesis because I have a Mega Everdrive, which allows you to play Sega CD games, but without the Sega CD. Even though it's like, it's still utilizing like the real hardware and everything like that. Yeah. So that's the thing that, you know, whole separate discussion, but yeah, somebody actually made a unworked quote unquote version of all of the working design Sega CD RPGs. And I'm playing through that right now to see how it is. Basically what they did is they, took away the artificial difficulty that Working Designs implemented for the US release to make the game, I guess, harder or longer or whatever. So it's basically playing the Japanese version, but with the Working Designs translation.
Yeah, I love when that happens. I got something like that for Silhouette Mirage, and I feel like at this point, every one of their games should just have it.
But the funny thing is, this is my fourth attempt to play through the game, and I always, like, as soon as you, like, I've always stopped my playthroughs as soon as you get the fourth character, that the mage.
Oh, keep going.
Yeah, no, I will. It's just like, I, you know, it just always happens that way. Then I'm like, I get to that point, and then I'm like, well, I'm going to try something else for a little while. And then I like kind of just neglect it.
No. Like,
yeah, no, it's fine. Like I said, I'm in the middle of it, so I will get back to it. So I'm not going to start the Steam one until I finish one of those other playthroughs.
Yes.
Speaking of finishing things, like, it's the end of the episode. Let's wrap this fucker up. That is the end of the show. Thank you, everyone, for coming and hanging out. Thanks for being here, doing your thing. And thanks to Andy for coming on, doing his thing as well. Music this episode. We talked about Chrono Trigger, so let's play something from Chrono Trigger. Sound good?
Sure.
Sure.
Woo. Does anyone have any final words to end the show? Surprise! Good enough.
I guess that's the word.